Views Radio Network. I'm going to tie in with Kenton Onstad. Kenton, good to have you on News and Views.
Hey, good morning.
And I want to tie in with State Senator Mac Schneider. Kenton, State Representative. Mac, good to have you on as well.
Thanks for having me on, Joel.
Guys, I'm sitting here looking at a letter that you sent off that goes to Terry Dwelly, the state health officer. And I'm going to go to you first, Kenton, on this. The letter is a formal request for information regarding that oil spill in Tioga. And it goes into details. I guess the best thing is it's best described by you. Kenton, what is this letter all about?
Well, it's basically about concerns that the public has. We talk about all this increased oil production and so on and moving through pipelines. And so, really, what is the procedure of when a spill does occur? I think we're a little lax in some of our rules. If everybody says we're following the rules properly, the public doesn't see that way. Notification of the public. There's long spans of keeping it within the industry, and I think the public really wants to know that. And if this is the case, then we have to make some changes legislatively.
Mac, there's a paragraph that got to me here. It said, as elected representatives who are supportive of increasing North Dakota's pipeline capacity, we believe it's imperative that state regulators and policymakers gather information to make necessary improvements in the above areas. We are all exceptionally thankful this spill does not appear to have impacted groundwater, wildlife, or the surrounding environment, but we strongly believe our state leaders must take the lessons of this disaster to heart. Mac, you don't just put your name to something like that without meaning it. Tell me about where you think the state needs to learn and what we did wrong here.
Well, we do have to learn from this disaster, and I think you can learn from failure, and certainly in this case, there's plenty of failure to go around. First is the failure of the pipeline itself. You know, clearly when you have 20,000 barrels of oil spilling and the first line of defense or the sense that something's wrong is a landowner that smells oil out in his field, that's an indication that things aren't working right. And so we need to get the answers that we're seeking by sending this letter to Dr. Dwelly in order to address that failure. There's also a tremendous failure of communication. I don't doubt that the Department of Health worked very quickly to contain this spill, but there was a failure to inform the public, lawmakers, and apparently even the governor. It's an example of what not to do when it comes to crisis communication. I've yet to receive any information from the Department of Health or any other state agency on this oil spill, and I've been trying to keep tabs on it by listening to the radio and reading the newspaper. That's not the way communication is supposed to work. And then, finally, there appears to be some confusion or potentially an area for improvement when it comes to additional state oversight of these pipelines. I understand that the federal government has oversight of crude oil pipelines. If there's a case to be made for greater state oversight, we're the ones that live here. I think we're in the best position to ensure the safety of these pipelines in conjunction with the federal government. So we're looking forward, Joel. We're trying to learn lessons from this, and certainly there are many lessons to be learned.
Kenton, did you ever think that these pipelines didn't have a monitoring system so that if you're losing 20,000-plus barrels of oil, which, by the way, I'm not convinced that that's the amount. Somebody's going to have to explain to me the science of how they came to 20,600 barrels when they didn't even know it was leaking. So did you even ever think that we didn't have some type of monitoring criteria so that we knew we were losing oil?
Well, we knew there it's not a requirement to have these monitoring systems on these pipelines. That was the reason for last session. House Bill 1347 was introduced asking that they put these pressure gauges on and monitoring systems on these pipelines, put it on there. And it's funny, if you look at the testimony, you have Industrial Commission, Oil and Gas Division, you have PSC, all reporting says, well, they're currently doing these things. And yet, history shows in 2000, the Charbonneau Creek spill, they didn't have the proper monitoring system. That was a saltwater spill. This one supposedly had remote monitoring systems, but not in the area that this spill occurred. And so to say after the fact, now we follow the rules, but we made this request last session as a requirement for pipelines. And, of course, it was defeated. And you have agency heads saying it wasn't necessary because they're already voluntarily doing this, which didn't happen.
Well, and to me, and Mac, that would be the most frustrating thing. You attempted to address it. There was legislation introduced to address it. The agency heads tell you there's no need for it. We're in control of it. And then you still don't even find out about the leak until later. And I had the governor on with me yesterday. I had Governor Jack Dalrymple on with me. And we've both worked around Jack Dalrymple for a long time, Mac. And that was as mad as I've seen him for a while. He was pretty upset that he hadn't been notified about this, Mac.
I don't blame him one bit. You think that the Department of Health or another responsible agency would take this up the chain within the executive branch at the very least. What the public can expect is to be informed in a timely and transparent manner about a disaster of this nature. And so I think that the governor's anger, rightful and deserved anger in this case, is indicative of the fact that we have to improve the way these things are handled. We need to have the goal be to prevent an undetected leak and spill of this size from ever happening again in North Dakota. So look forward to working with the governor and lawmakers of both parties to make sure that happens.
Well, I think it's appropriate what you're doing here. I also would be very curious to find, you know, in North Dakota, we have excellent open records laws. We do. And I'm wondering, Mac and Kenton, I guess I'll throw this one to you first, Mac, with your legal background. I'm wondering if it isn't necessary to request open records on when people knew what and when they informed each other what. Because, you know, I'd hate to see somebody be the fall guy for something when, in fact, correspondence might have been made.
Yes, the importance of making changes, that's pretty clear. How we go about making those changes, it starts with accurate information about who knew what and when. That's why we're giving the Department of Health a chance to answer these critical questions. There are only five of them. It shouldn't be that difficult. If the answers are insufficient, which I'm hopeful that they will not be, we can always request open records, and we intend to do that if we're not satisfied with the answers, because we feel very strongly that things need to change and this should never happen again.
Kenton, you're a realist. If you go back to that legislative session again and you say, look, you know, basically the I told you so. We need this type of mechanical structure so that we know whether these pipelines are leaking or not. Do you think you got a chance of getting it passed this time?
Well, obviously it's a better chance because we have something historically here to relate to. But even last session, we had the Charbonneau Creek spill. That was historical, and you can go back to the old statements, and they said they did not have adequate monitoring equipment on this line. And then Helms made that statement. And so the Industrial Commission did that, and so here you have additional pipelines, and we're saying the regulatory says, well, we may require this on certain lines and site-specific and so on. Well, how do you know where a line is going to have a leak at? So the requirement of House Bill 1347 is to make them all have some type of monitoring systems and pressure control devices. Is that too much to ask to protect public safety? I mean, it would be an easy fix now if this is going to be a $4 million cleanup. I would think they would want that in place. It would be a lot cheaper now.
The economics of it, looking at what Tesoro is going to have to pay. The other concern I have here, Mac, is that this was done apparently through corrosion. And in talking about this, they're talking about a 200-foot section of it that might need replacing. Mm-hmm. You know, that instantly throws up a big red flag for me. It isn't as though just 200 feet of a pipeline corrodes if it's because of what's put in the ground. My experience with anything like that is it's probably pitted and corroded a long ways. How do you make sure that this isn't something that all needs to be replaced, Mac?
Well, I understand there's a technology called a smart peg that you can send through the entire course of the line to ensure that the integrity is there and that the public is protected. And it's my understanding, from reading media reports, that was done, but the test results were not received by the time that Tesoro turned us on. Certainly we have the technology to prove that these pipelines are safe and we should use them.
All right, guys, thank you for what you're doing. I think it's very prudent. I appreciate it. Kent Nonstedt, Max Schneider, appreciate you coming on today.